Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. Monday evening once again, and Edwin is back for another rant. And Edwin, we are in the craziest of times that keep getting more crazy. What will happen next?
And I keep on saying that Russia's going to do something. And that they just seem to have gone to sleep. Who knows, Martin? Who knows? Maybe the RBA will cut the rates. I don't know what anything can happen. Albanese resigns tomorrow. Who knows? Penny Wong takes over. I mean, that's one of my predictions, right? That Albo will get ousted before the end of the year. So I'm still thinking that's in the pipeline. But look, things are crazy, Martin. They're getting crazier, and people are acting out the frustrations of the economy, migration, the whole bit. Just hopefully you're not out there on the streets with the Union Jack running around.
Well, it is worth just reflecting for a second on the stupidity that we're seeing here in the UK, for example. You know, there were the three little kids murdered. But that's led to massive amounts of problems on the streets, particularly up in Northern England, although actually Bristol, not far from me, also were hit too. In fact, here's a couple of, recent videos that just show the nature of what's going on. It really is pretty dire at the moment. And people aren't really quite sure what's creating it and, you know, why it's happening. But what's interesting is that there's quite a lot of debate specifically around the issue of migration and the fact that there's a lot of pressure because of high migration in the UK. And also people are now conflating some of these things with some of the cost of living pressures, which of course have been substantial as well. And whilst inflation in the UK is down a little, and in fact the Bank of England cut rates just last week, a lot of people are really feeling it. So, on the streets, it's pretty dire, and the amount of damage being done, and also, frankly, the amount of distrust in the community is pretty severe. And I find it quite interesting, Edwin, that one of the issues that's coming through is the lack of trust in the government and what the government is doing. We've got a new government, of course, in the UK. But it seems to me that those themes of migration, cost of living, and lack of trust are actually quite relevant also to Australia. And I don't know what you think, but this, for me, this really sums things up rather well, right? Talk about an alpaca that's been fleeced. And it seems to me that that's what people are feeling a bit like. Oh, goodness me, what on earth has happened?
Yeah, so the brown alpaca at the front is what people believe the economy really looks like, and the white one at the back is what it actually looks like, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And you could also take it slightly further, and of course, until you look down, the alpaca on the left were thinking, gee, it's a bit chilly. I'm not quite sure what's going on. But here's the point, right? You know, if you do look around and if you do actually understand what's going on, then a lot of people are beginning to wake up to the fact that what you think is going on isn't necessarily what's actually going on.
Yeah, and this is the extension of all these government policies that have been thrown around for decades, and how it's affected the cost of living. We got the rental crisis, the mortgage crisis. We've got all different crises, and people are just fed up, and they've got to take it out on somebody, and unfortunately that somebody could be you or could be me. Because we look different, we talk different, we walk different, we dress different, and that's the unfortunate thing. Hence the reason why we've been saying in a lot of our shows and saying to people is prepare your homes for all different things, not only for to maintain the property in its the best integrity. So if you do need to sell, if you need to vacate and move on, it's been well looked after. But also prepare yourself in terms of what else is there around the corner that we don't know of. Are we going to have brownouts, blackouts? Where is the government being led by the nose to implement whatever policies that don't necessarily benefit the Aussies, the battlers? It really benefits those that are sitting on their Eiffel Towers and making more. And so there's so much more that's yet to come. This is what I've been saying for a number of years. The system isn't broken yet. But we seem to be pushing hard and fast towards breaking it. We don't know. A lot of people need to take a step back and your enemy isn't your neighbor. Your enemy isn't your fellow man, your fellow woman, your fellow person. Your enemy is really the bureaucrats that sit in their Eiffel Towers dictating and telling the politicians what to do and how to do it. And they're our real enemy. It's that enemy that we don't really see, that don't really front up, that aren't front and center in the news. I mean, we see the Albos, we see the ScoMos, we see whoever's leading the country. We see them, we blame them, or we blame the Libs or the Labs. But the enemy are those that the puppet masters that are pulling their strings. So when we start looking at life that way, and we start preparing for the future, I think we can, in a way, be a little bit more sober with what we do and what we say, so that way we can have a be ready, be ready and be prepared for what's around the corner. Like I said, stay sober and vigilant, because we don't know. We don't know who's gonna be enraged around us. Again, I'll go back to the cost of living crisis, the fear of not having that peaceful enjoyment of and longevity of a roof over your head, whether it be a rental or whether it be a ownership of a property. Creates a lot of other pressures, and those pressures are you and I share about and talk about the consequences of these pressures and what people end up doing when they're desperate. These are desperate people, and of course you've got the minority, the idiots that are out there just to beat on somebody, just to throw a punch at a stranger. You're always going to have that percentage of idiots, regardless. But the rest, the rest is the one who let out their frustrations, and I can see, you can see it, and it's all about those three things that you mentioned, Michael.
Well, I think it's very important to understand, Edwin, that whilst the government is positioning in the UK that these are right-wing thugs and they should be locked up, I think that the pressures on households are running much deeper than that. And certainly in my latest analysis, interestingly, a lot of people are really, really struggling. And that's in Australia as well as in the UK, because I'm running my surveys now in both places. And that's actually having quite an interesting set of observations, because it allows me to look at a lot more detail about what's really going on. And in fact, I released a show yesterday called Calibrating the Real Impact of Households' Financial Relief, because, of course, the official narrative has been for some time that the government is really bending over backwards to reduce the cost of living pressure and reduce the inflationary pressures. And we are seeing just a little bit of that coming through in the surveys in Australia. But what's interesting is that it's the investment sector, in other words, probably investors, who are experiencing the most significant levels of relief compared with where they were previously. So for a lot of people, the true impact of all the imposts in terms of the cost of living pressures and everything else, hasn't really changed very much. And unfortunately, a lot of the spruiking that's going on at the moment is really pointing in a rather different direction. One of the interesting observations is this data point. This is actually the household disposable income chart. And you can see here in Australia how much household disposable income has dropped substantially. This is actually comparing it in real terms from 2019 compared with the US OECD countries or G7 countries. So this really puts in sharp contrast the pressures on households. And I think that we should take seriously, really seriously, what's actually going on with regards to, you know, real houses on the ground. Now, I know that property prices are still relatively heated and still going up in many places. But below the waterline, you know, there's a lot of pressure on households. And even some of the recent research that's come out, for example, Finder said, well, if you want to buy somewhere in Brisbane, you need to earn about $166,000 a year just to replace the median priced house, and that's gone up substantially. Or if you look down in Melbourne, then you need a $73,000 pay rise since 2020 to be able to actually afford to buy. And that's the real problem, that, you know, things have really shot away from people relative to incomes. And, you know, you can even say in Sydney it's the same. So, you know, you need to earn twice as much as that's in 2024 compared with 2020 to buy the average property in Sydney. And that just puts in contrast some of the things that we see relative to what some of the politicians are talking about, which is that, you know, we are actually not doing too badly. And, you know, Chalmers has done a reasonably good job on inflation, et cetera, et cetera. He's helped. The economy is soft. People are under the pump. The pressures, but we are responding to them with our cost of living help. And Chalmers said that the latest numbers were quite good, although, of course, the inflation's still sticky. So, you know, the reality, I think, of some long period of time when things were really stuck is really coming through. And I'm not sure where it's going to go from here, insofar that, do you think the RBA is going to move, or do you think the RBA will sit pat? Or, you know, it's an interesting question. You actually put, I think, a Twitter post up about that the other little while ago, saying, Dusty is of the opinion there's a slight chance of a rate cut, more likely perhaps no movement. And what are the agents and buyers saying and thinking about this as well, Edwin?
Well, look, there are people still attending opens to that. There are still a lot of buyers out there. They're not jumping in at the moment because obviously they're waiting to see what's going to happen with the rates tomorrow. They've been waiting for the last 21 days. Things have been really, really quiet. Hence the reason why we've been saying that the market's been really patchy. Obviously, some of the vendors have been jumpy and they've been, getting out before the day of the auction as well. Also fearing that there will be a rate rise and the properties may not fetch the target price. And if they've come close to that target price pre the auction, well, they've taken the money and cash in hand. Is better than a maybe post tomorrow and so forth. So it's really everybody's playing a wait and see game. But what a lot of the chatter amongst the agents is, but there's still a lot of buyers. Mm-hmm. There are still a lot of buyers. See, we're going to have a lot of. We may end up with a lot more choice, and this is where the people are still going to pay premium for homes. The chatter out there is that from my colleagues, they're saying that they themselves don't believe that the types of properties, your freestanding homes that are well presented in sought after areas, they're still going to maintain the price points. They're not going down, even if we end up with a lot more, double the amount of properties on those in those particular pockets. We're not really gonna feel a downward turn like we've got in Melbourne, because the numbers are just not there. The numbers in terms of listings on market are still not there. The demand is still very high. We've shared that Sydney is the place to be, the place to go, the go-to place for many migrants that are coming in, that are coming in with cashed up, and also the investors are very much still focused in the Sydney market because of the ease to manage your room lettings or your budget accommodation scenarios. It's just a lot easier. The regulations aren't as tight or bad as they otherwise are in Melbourne or in others, starting to tighten the bolts there over in Queensland. But we're not there. We're not there yet. So they're just playing a wait and see game. I think, look, the worst thing for buyers is going to be if there is a rate cut. Obviously, then it's just going to give a lot more ammunition for the vendors to just wait for a higher price. They'll know that just the the emotion there will dictate it, that they will ask more. A rate rise, I don't feel that it's going to have a major impact on the Sydney market because of the demand that is still there. And I'm talking about agents that we talk to in the north, south, east, and west of the Sydney region, and some agents in the greater region, the greater regions as well. There's interest. They speak to the buyers, but they're just waiting. Everyone's just playing waiting game. But I think, Martin, the thing is that what we will be seeing a lot more of, regardless of whether the rates go up or whether the rates go down or whether they stay stagnant, what we will see more of is what you and I have been saying for a while now, is that we're going to get a lot of lemons on the market, that it's going to be the best time for people to rid themselves of homes that require tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to bring them up to bring them up to speed, whether it be an investment property or whether it be a principal place of residence. And a lot of them are with hidden defects that agents do not disclose. They, in a way, they don't need to disclose. Ethically, they should be disclosing them, but it's not captured by the required legislation that they must disclose. They don't consider it to be a material fact. False. It's up to you. Hence the reason why caveat emptor, and hence the reason why you should get your own independent building and pest report. I mean, that's the thing. But from a moral and ethical point of view, which agents can be pulled in on as well, they won't disclose it unless you can prove that the agent was aware, was knowingly aware, and so it's very difficult. I mean, I find out a lot of stuff because of that, my connections, what I have, what I see, how I dig around. So, like today, I was inspecting a duplex in Ermington for one of our clients, and the building and pest report that she got from the agent. Just it was very, very superficial. I mean, it was the only thing it was used for was to light up the barbecue, on Saturday or Sunday, whenever you have your barbecue. That's all it was good for. But other than that, it didn't disclose the fact that the ensuite shower recess area was the waterproofing had been. Was compromised. You couldn't see it obviously in the ensuite itself, but when you start digging around in your linen cupboards behind the ensuite, on the corridor, and you can start to see the moisture. And I was pointing that to both the agent and our client. And also, the ensuite sat above the garage of this duplex, and there was a water stain in the on the ceiling of the garage, where below where the shower recess area was. So it was they're things that I pick up. They're things that I know what to look for and how to look for them. But even building inspectors don't, because obviously they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them, and they don't want to put out a those before you bid inspection reports that are too too ominous that that people aren't going to be bidding or aren't going to be making offers because it scares the crap out of them. But it should scare the crap out of people. But unfortunately, Martin, we're going to see a lot more of these lemons go through and get bought, and all because they're being staged, they're being presented in a way that it's appealing, it caters to the emotion. So that's what we're going to see moving forward. Regardless, we are going to see a lot of lemons out there. The prize properties, in my opinion, across all markets of the Sydney region, according to Domain, are going to be still going to fetch a good price. And you can tell, you could have the same property right next to each other, built by the same builder many years ago, and the way that the one's being maintained to the way that the other one's being maintained, chalk and cheese, and there will be hundreds of thousands of dollars apart because of the presentation and how they're being maintained. So, but in general, Martin, I really think that we will be seeing a lot more properties on the market in spring. We are seeing a lot more properties on the market currently than what we were seeing last year. We're going to see a lot more properties on the market in spring, but not enough to really quench the demand that's out there on the ground.
Yes, and you mentioned the RBA rate question, and it is worth dwelling on that, I think, for a second, simply because this could be quite a material factor as we think about it. If you look at what the AFR said, AFR readers say the RBA should hold. Another article said, don't pop the champagne on interest rate cuts just yet. And the argument there is that we've still got the situation where inflation is really not fully under control, despite what Chalmers has been hinting at. Although, of course, if you look at the latest forward estimates in the market, who of course are reacting to events over the weekend with regard to significant falls in markets in the US last Friday, and now, of course, in the Asian region on Monday. So, shares in Sydney fell quite considerably in Japan, dramatic falls, and in fact, they had to cease trading for a couple of times. So, the interbank cash rate, which is a bit of an indication of, how things are going, has moved quite dramatically because it was actually pointing higher than the current 4.35% until the end of last week. And now the market is saying, oh, rates are going to come down, rates are going to come down. So that's an interesting observation. But, it's worth just reading another side of the story. This is from Warren Hogan. Of course, Warren has tended to be on the more bullish side in terms of what the RBA should do. And his argument still is that there isn't evidence for a material step down in inflation. He's worried that the inflation pressures are still there. The monetary policy is only really restrictive on a relatively small subset of households and businesses. And the fiscal impulse, in other words, how much money has been thrown back into the economy, more than 40 billion of new money hitting the economy in 24-25, will potentially be inflationary. So, his point of view is that the cash rate has been effectively too low, and that means that inflation is still very much there. And as a result of that, what it means is that the expectation of lower rates is actually necessarily a bit of a question. So, it's hard to know how this is going to play out. And if you read carefully what the spruikers have been saying, well, of course, they tend to go on the, well, see here, here's an example of property still selling over the reserves. So, nothing to see here. It's all good. But I don't know about you. For me, Edwin, the consequences of Rex closing its business down at the moment, in other words, regional, is actually quite significant. And it's fascinating to me. I'm doing a one-on-one a bit later on today with somebody who's interested in regional New South Wales property. That's coming down quite considerably. So I think regional properties are going to be very much under the gun ahead. And I noticed that that was actually something that, guess what? The WeChat chatters had actually picked up a bit of ahead of time, right? So it's interesting that they are perhaps saying, well, hang on, some of the consequences of Rex going into administration could actually create opportunity, but also risk.
Yeah, and this is something again. They set the trend in many you start from when we've been following them very closely and been talking about them on the show. They're well ahead of many trends. In many cases, they set it. So what the chatter around that, and also what you and Robbie Barwick have been talking about with the banking institutions pulling out of many smaller regional towns as well, how that affects the those economies. So there's real no drive. So you're going to have the pathway to PR from a medical point of view, obviously, is the quickest pathway to PR that you could obtain here in Australia. So you've got any form of medical background, from nursing right up to being a doctor, a specialist, that's the easiest and quickest pathway. Now, if you want to obtain PR even a lot quicker, you apply to be posted in regional areas of Australia, New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, wherever. And obviously then everything speeds up for you. So what the chatterers are talking about, well, that's going to be putting a damper on things moving forward. And they're not going to worry about being stay taking a bit longer if they then choose not to be posted out in their regional towns, but choose to be posted in the main capital, in the main cities, because obviously the families can't go and visit them. They can see the writings on the wall for many of these towns that are just going to be absolutely decimated, economically wise. Industry is going to be going backwards. So it's a snowball effect, and the governments really don't realize what's happening. Rather than supporting and backing up the regional airline, they just let it go to administration, into liquidation, and then but what's the alternative? So what they're saying, Martin, is expect more professionals to come back from the regions, right? Even if the time frame for obtaining their PR is going to be lengthened because they've left their post. And therefore, rentals are going to continue to rise, and there's going to be a greater demand of your, in pockets. Again, we go back to what we've been speaking about before as well. What I've been talking about, the polarization of your demographics, of your, ethnic backgrounds, is just going to get stronger. And it's going to get more valuable to own real estate in certain areas based on the demographics that are building, buying, and renting in those pockets. Some would have a different effect. They'll be a stronger with obviously it's very strong with the Asian communities. But you only have to look at how, for example, Eastwood has emerged, because you go to Eastwood, Martin, any day of the week, and till late evening, and it's a buzzing little town. You go to Burwood. I mean, I was at Burwood yesterday, and at about six, what was it, about 6:30, we couldn't get a table. We couldn't get a table at some of the restaurants, some of the nicer, we just couldn't get a table. It is absolutely humming away. Then you drive out of Burwood and you start going through other town suburbs, and the ghost towns. Come 3, 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, they become absolutely ghost towns. So you sort of picture that. And then you juxtapose that with your regional areas, and that's what's going to happen, where you've got your banking institutions, you've got health practitioners basically vacating those areas. How are the towns going to survive? So there's only one way. Like, the people are just going to start seeing the writing on the wall, and they're just going to say, "Hey, I better get out now before everybody else starts pulling out, pulling up stumps and going back into the cities, or going back to where I can be looked after in my older age." Because getting old is very expensive here in Australia, Martin. It is damn expensive. You don't get any nursing homes, going backwards in price in terms of the accommodation or the costs to stay in one. Retirement homes, SEP 55 dwellings are in high demand because there's just not enough of them. And then if you need care, if you need home care or any other medical assistance, or just care to be able to, because you're of an age that you can't find it very difficult to get out of home, and you've got to do some shopping and that, and it's very, very costly. And it's very costly, very cumbersome, and there's just not enough to go around. And so if it's costly at a point in your city, in your city areas, can you imagine how much more it would cost to get old in your regional towns when you don't have these facilities on call, and the medical practitioners and specialists are hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away?
Absolutely. And it's interesting because, of course, I had experience of living in regional New South Wales. And it's quite fascinating because when I first went down to the Thorool area, we actually had a medical practice just up the road that didn't charge for any visits at all. By the time I'd left, they were charging like wounding bulls, right? Because effectively that was the only way that they could actually make it economically work. We had had quite a few local shops close relatively recently as well. And the nature of what you could do in the town, the banks had pulled out. So there was no banking other than the very local banks, the community banks that still were there, but the rest of the banks had gone. So CBA and ANZ had left. And the character of that place had really changed dramatically. And if you're okay to get around, and if you can drive, et cetera, you can probably carry on. But of course, if you actually need those local services and facilities, and then if you tried to get help, of course, when I was looking after Jill when she was ill, we pulled on a lot of community support and help from New South Wales government, et cetera. But it was really, really tricky just to be able to get the level of support we needed through her illness. So it is an object lesson, I think, that people should be thinking ahead a little bit and planning ahead. And as you say, regional Australia is definitely being left on the outer at the moment, unfortunately. Now let's move the conversation forward, Edwin, because there's a really, really interesting case study here, right? And I want to start with the end result of a particular property, right? This is the end result. It looks pretty nice, you know. It's got shiny floors and new fittings, and if you were walking around that property, you would think things are pretty good. However, there's a story here, isn't there, Edwin?
Definitely, this is your showroom. Well, it's not too showy, but it gives you the appearance that on face value that okay, it's been renovated. It's it's a little bit dated, yes, but it gives you that fresh look. Well, it's what you don't see that tells the greatest that tells the greatest story. And this bathroom has been tiled. Tiled on tiles, has been renovated as your bathroom as your showroom renovation that we've been speaking about for a number of years now on the show. So this is an opportunity for our followers and our viewers to actually see one in the process of what it looked like before.
So this is before.
That's yes.
Okay, so this is the
so wallpaper.
Okay, the original McCoy before anything was done. Okay.
mean, this video makes makes her look even, three times better than what he was in life. The wallpaper's peeling off the walls. Dark and old, smelly.
So rather different from that picture that we saw to start with. And then this is the story of it halfway through.
Halfway through, the walls have got billboard and tiles where there were tiles. There's new tiles on top of the old tiles and all the way to the ceiling to give it that freshly renovated look. Well, $4,500, right? But an unsuspected buyer without doing proper due diligence is gonna think, well, that bathroom's gonna last me another 10 years, 10, 15 years. Who knows? It may, but when they do want to renovate that bathroom again, they're gonna find out that they've got two layers of tiles.
Right. So, I mean, what you're saying basically is that that photograph at the that we showed, which is the end result, really doesn't tell you the full story, right? So there's a lot of stuff, and as you say, if you then choose to do a renovation later again, you're going to find it's a huge, 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 huge problem.
And you don't know how long this renovation, because obviously there's no waterproofing, there's no nothing, but you would hope, your fingers crossed, that the tiles underneath these tiles are gonna be
Very,
the
very good.
waterproofing
Now, you've also provided some pictures of another one, and this is actually even more astonishing to me. This is actually termites in action, right?
This is scary. This is really, really scary stuff. This, now you're talking about a $1.6 million villa. I call it a villa. It's only a small, small house. It is a villa, a 3-bedroom villa. And this up to 4 or 5 weeks ago, the termites were still active. So this is photos of when they sent a handyman to go and look at some dampness that was coming through the wall, and then the handyman did poked around a little bit, and then started pulling the gyprock and some of the billboard away from the walls because it was concentrated in the bathroom areas, the ensuite, the main bathroom, and the laundry areas. And this is what he reported back to the agent as to what he found. So there's actually a couple other photos there that you could show the viewers there you go. That's the ensuite adjoining to the main bathroom, and the other wall is a wall that adjoins to the laundry area. So that's the effect of it. So what they chose to do is just quickly rebuild the framework. Now they're making the assumption that the termite damage is isolated to just the wet areas, the ensuite bathroom and the laundry area. There's no real checks and balances to see what other parts of the house are being affected, unless you do a proper invasive inspection. Now, I've sent you a video there, Martin, of what it actually looks now. So, that's what it was. It looked 5 weeks ago, and the termites were still active. And the next video that you're going to show is the end result of how it's now being presented, and this property will be on the market next week.
So this is the final finished
This is
product.
the final finished product. Property is being staged.
And you would never know about all the termites, but there's no guarantee, is there, that the termites have been completely obliterated. It's very much a superficial slap a bit of stuff on here and put some more onboarding there and then tile over it and then set it quick.
They've got a termite barrier around the property now, but and a termite barrier, and I think they've got 4 or 5 traps as well. So look, Are they still active? I don't know. I was more interested in in getting these videos and these snaps for our viewers. When I found out about the property, I you know that was what I wanted to show what goes on out there and what people are buying without doing proper due diligence. Look, unless you can pick up like if you walk around the perimeter of the house, you will see you'll actually see on the floor the one or two termite traps. And unless you know what they are, you wouldn't have a clue. You just walk right past them. And if you're the average punter, you wouldn't have a clue. And I can guarantee you that the building and pest report, all it would show on the building and pest report is that based on the current condition, is that there is a termite barrier, and because the inspector has not seen anything physically, or they won't do an intrusive investigation, they may question the termite traps. They may question that, or may not question it. They may miss it themselves. They themselves may not know what a termite trap looks like, because you'd be surprised what these building inspectors that prepare your before you bid reports for the agents and agencies don't know, and the BS that they write, and because they spend very little time. So even if I wasn't aware of the property, when I walked through the property, it would be very difficult to pick up other than that the bathrooms. You can tell. I can tell that the bathrooms have been, recently renovated. The finishes in the renovation were a little bit were not to to specs, to the code. So therefore, my next question to the agent, if I come across this property without knowing the history, I would be asking the agent. When were the bathrooms renovated? And the agent will then tell me, within months, or within probably stretch it out to half a year ago or something like that, some BS. But if they're truthful and they tell me that they're only just being recently renovated, I would ask for all the compliance certificates, and as to who did the renovation. And were they willing to come back and finish it off properly, because it's not to code, right? So if a tradesperson, has done the renovation, well, it's got to be to code. And that's how I would do the digging around, and then sooner than later, you catch the agent out. But that's if you know what you're doing, Martin. But if you don't know what you're doing, you think, shit, it's a swanky, looks good. It's neat and fresh, smells good. They've got all these floral odorizers in there, and oils and so forth, and candles going off everywhere. So yeah, the whole place smells really good and
Well,
attractive.
actually, I think that's often a bit of a giveaway, right? The number of times that I've seen properties where they've deliberately lit candles and, got all these smellies all over the place. You think, oh, what are you hiding? There's a bit more going on here than you might see. But the point is, if you walk into that property and you do a superficial look, and if you rely on the very narrow survey building pest inspection that the vendor has actually been paid for, that the agent is actually propagating, they won't mention any of that stuff, will they? So what you end up doing is you're buying a property that you think is A and it's actually B. And the trouble is that you quite often won't understand just how much problem you've got until later, because the termites might come back, or if you do decide to do some more work later, you'll discover that under the surface is not what you thought it was. And so you're actually up for a lot more costs than you might have been. And it's all back down to you must do the due diligence as part of the purchase process. And as I said before, Eben, you've seen it, I think, quite often too. When the property market is relatively bouncy, and when there's a lot of demand from certain types of people to buy, they tend to shelve some of the due diligence because they just want to make sure they buy. Or you might be in the situation where you're only just able to afford scrape together the deposit and scrape together repayments. So you're trying to actually keep your purchase price and the costs of buying down as far as you can. And that's the one I'm seeing a lot of from first-time buyers trying to get into the market at the moment. But you end up buying a lemon. And as we keep saying, a lemon is a lemon is a lemon. So this is a really good object lesson, I think, and it just shows you how careful you have to be.
Look, a building and pest report with thermal imaging is going to cost you between $750 and $850. Years back, I used to pay $1,700 just for the thermal imaging. But the only thing is the thermal imaging isn't necessarily going to show if the termites are no longer active. If they vacate the property, you're not going to. You're not going to see much. You really have to get in the roof cavity and check it out, because that is where you want to see how far these little bastards have gone, right? You really, but that again, we go back to you've got to be really inquisitive. You're like a detective. You just got to chase things, chase leads, and ask the questions why, and ask the questions when, and how come, and the why not. And as you said, Martin, you hit the nail on the head. It won't affect you right now. You're buying it as is. But then later on, you decide, you say, you know what? Shit, I'm going to open up this wall. I'm going to open up this wall, and I'm going to create a little bit more space for myself. And you call a tradesperson in, and they start pulling the gyprock down, and they start demolishing the wall and getting it ready. And lo and behold, you're actually the only thing that was holding up that wall was the gyprock, because there's no studs or framework. And then you sort of start to think to yourself, okay, even from an inspection through the ceiling, the roof cavity, they may not have got beyond the top plates of the frame, so you're not really going to see anything. But yet, how much of the external walls were possibly affected, that is going to compromise the weight, the sheer weight, because it might the external walls, the framework on the external walls are the ones that mainly support the roof structure. You've got some load-bearing walls inside, but the majority are on the external walls. How many of those walls were affected, and how long before the roof starts sagging, and all these things, so all these unknowns. So this is where I really, when you say that they want to save costs, they want to save money on doing the due diligence. What's $750 to get a good building and pest inspector to do and to give you a thorough report? And they will spend the hour and a half to 2 hours, the good ones, doing real good thorough inspections, and they will push things around, and they will do a bit more than the before you bid inspectors that provide those reports. Because I know for a fact, from speaking to my colleagues in the industry, most of them are in and out like Flynn. 10, 15, yeah, sorry, 15, 20 minutes, they're in and out. I mean, shit, it takes me 20 minutes to get in the roof cavity.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's just an object lesson, and we're just going to keep repeating, can't we, Edwin? This is really, really important. Do your due diligence. Let's move the conversation forward now, just briefly, to touch on the latest in terms of the numbers, because, well, the Sydney region on the 29th was 16,724, and jumping forward, it's now up to 17,219. So the listings numbers have risen a little. And in fact, your chart shows here that compared with last year, the for sale listings are continuing to accelerate higher. But two observations: the total volume is still relatively low, but also the quality of what's being listed is now the big question, isn't it?
Definitely, and this is more, and I feel there's going to be a lot more coming up in spring. There will be a lot more coming up in spring, and but the it's yeah, just be continue to be aware of the lemons, and don't follow Don't follow the emotion. Don't get caught up in that whirlwind of emotion that with all these new and shiny renovations. I think that's one of the key things here is you can pay a bit more because it's been renovated, but make sure that you're paying for a good renovation, not just a showroom renovation.
No, absolutely. And it's just worth just looking at the latest in terms of capital values. This has actually come out quite recently. And what I like about this is it shows you that the movements actually are quite different, whether you're looking at the lowest 25%, the median 50, or the highest 25% of values. And you can see there that in Sydney, the truth is at the top end, there's almost no capital growth, but at the bottom end, quite strong growth. And as you see, also Melbourne is also showing falls at the middle and upper edges, whereas Brisbane, as well as Adelaide and Perth, are showing significantly stronger growth. Hobart, everything's on the way down, and ACT, it depends. So one of the things that we should also just highlight again, Edwin, is that these high level stories about what values are doing don't necessarily tell you the full story. There's a lot more to look at. Look at the type of property, look at where it is, et cetera, et cetera. And you can only go back to say the same things again, that actually not all property is behaving the same way. And it's really important to dig around a little bit and make sure that you really understand what's going on. Just on the Melbourne sales and listings, on the 29th, we had 27,221 listed for sale in the Melbourne region. And if we jump forward, it's 27,241 on the 5th of August. So it's interesting that the trajectory is perhaps a little bit different there, whereas Brisbane, 3,611 on the 29th, whereas on the 5th of August, we had 2,641 in the Brisbane region. So not so dramatic changes in terms of what we're seeing. And I guess that perhaps reflects the slightly different situation relative to Sydney compared with the others. But it's just worth looking, I think, at the auctions in terms of what's going on there. And actually, it's still relatively strong, although the clearance rates are still relatively low at the moment.
Yeah, look, it's humming along. People still wanted to choose that. I think the most interesting thing for me for this week for the auction numbers is the fact that you got 888. So maybe good omen for Melbourne. Yeah, we might get a very high clearance rate, or it could be the opposite. Could be great for buyers. They'll get a lot of great bargains in Melbourne. I mean, the property market there is just acting and reacting totally different to the Sydney market because people just wanted to get out. So anyway, it's just interesting. The numbers are can not much in the numbers. Clearance rates are on average, but I think it's because people are just waiting for tomorrow. We'll see.
Well, in fact, Nyla Sweeney at the AFR made that point that auction clearance rates fell sharply in Sydney over the weekend as the reprieve from another interest rate rise failed to calm nervous home buyers. And the Sydney-based auctioneer said, "We're seeing fewer homes selling above the reserve at the moment. I think everyone is very cautious. Buyers are certainly very price sensitive. And you have a large segment of buyers in the market that are waiting and hoping for interest rate cuts." So we'll see whether those interest rate cuts come or not. As we said earlier on, there's some evidence to suggest that maybe those cuts are not coming as quickly as perhaps the markets are now gambling on based on the latest movements. And with all of these expectations, things do move around quite a lot. Now, just as we come to the end of the story, we should probably just briefly look at the rentals. And in Sydney, on the 29th, there were 12,832 available. Whereas the next week, on the 5th, 12,716. Relative to Melbourne, on the 29th, 10,649 compared with 10,685. So, small moves, but nothing significant. Although I did notice that the rental growth is still relatively strong. It varies a little bit state to state and location to location. But frankly, for a lot of people, the rates of growth is still excessive. And this actually is the most recent data from CoreLogic that showed, well, Brisbane's at 7%, Darwin's 2.1, Perth at 13.3, that's in units. And stronger, of course, as well for rents, Perth 12.6, whereas Darwin's down at 2.6. But I'll highlight, bearing in mind where inflation is at the moment, that in most of the major centres, inflation is lower than the rent. And in fact, 7.3% was the contribution to inflation, 7.3% over the last 12 months that came from the latest data. So we know that things are actually pretty worrying. And Edwin, just before I throw you the bone for the last thought before we leave, I wanted to share this picture. This came in from somebody who sent it to me, one of our viewers. I'm looking at Bathurst. I just wanted to show people the dereliction that's there all this year. For sale, for sale, for sale, for sale, right? And no building activity, because I think this is, for me, is archetypal at the moment. We're seeing a lot of this across the country where there's really very little building activity and a lot of plots for sale, but no activity. This is another reason the supply side story is bust.
Nobody wants to build. I mean, there's a lot of pain out there in building. Costs continue to climb, and who wants to build? Hence the reason why you've got nobody wants to build in Melbourne as well. You've got over 4,000 blocks for sale in your Melbourne region. In Sydney, you've got closer to I think it's 1,200 or something blocks for sale in in the Sydney region. And that's only been climbing. There's 4,130 in the Melbourne region. There's you've got 1,298 in your Sydney region, and they've been climbing. They haven't been considering there's a huge demand. And again, we go back to the other point, more so in the Sydney region, where there's high demand for property for people who want to come into the property market for your first home buyers and that. It's just too costly, just way too costly. And now we're going to negate even looking at greater regional New South Wales for some people to go and start the property journey and relocate because they can't afford closer to the Sydney regions, the central areas of your Sydney regions, and because of the lack of infrastructure. I mean, the people that are leading us, Martin, just don't have a clue. They really just don't have a freaking clue what they're doing.
No, well, that's exactly right. And the latest from the various state governments confirms that they don't have a clue. I will also say, Edwin, that if our followers and viewers have particular photographs they'd like to share with regards to the current state of the property market, we're always interested to include them. You can always post them up on Twitter, or you can contact Vimeo, the DFA blog, and send it through to me. And always appreciate the on-the-ground reporting, because it helps to revalidate what we're talking about. But as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, a quick tip of the week from you.
Yeah, look, rubbish is becoming more and more expensive to get rid of. There's, I think, a lot of people are not taking advantage of the free council pickups that are available. Some LGAs are allowing their the homes to have up to six council pickups. The Randwick LGA are allowing the homes around there in the Randwick LGA 6. In the mountains, we only get two. Where I am anyway. But different areas. But don't be surprised if they start pegging back on the amount of free council pickups that you're going to be having moving forward. So I think it's a Great opportunity now to start your spring cleaning season early and get rid of rubbish before, because from the other side of things, where we're helping our clients to fix up their homes before they sell or to renovate post-purchase, to get the skip bins in, the prices have just been, from 6 months ago, that we've had an increase of about 12%, and it's huge for mixed waste. There's a lot of rubbish around, and I'm sure before you start having to pay to get rid of it, call the council and book yourself a free council pickup.
Yeah, it's interesting because I used to live at Cremorne Point in Sydney, and at that time, North Sydney Council would actually have very regular collections, and there were no limits on what you could put out. I moved down to Thirroul, and there you were limited dramatically to two pickups a year, and it was basically a couple of square meters of volume that you could actually deal with. And then when you actually looked at the fees at the local tip, the fees were astronomical to be able to take them to the Wollongong tip if you wanted to dispose of anything. So suddenly getting rid of stuff was a real problem. And as you say, the costs of skips. And when I moved, I had quite a lot of rubbish that I needed to get rid of because we'd been in the place for many years, and it cost quite a lot just to get rid of it, to be able to actually move it. So plan ahead, and as you say, use those free pickups as and when you can. So it's really important. I just want to give you a tip back, Edwin, before I this was actually an article that came out over the weekend from ABC, and it's actually from Gareth Hutchins, who's one of the economics reporters at the ABC. And he was focusing in on this question of Australia must treat housing as a human right, says former Victorian Supreme Court judge. And actually, this really put the cat among the pigeons. I don't know whether you saw, but there was a lot of reaction to, is housing an investment, an asset, or is it a human right? And I actually have always said that, to my mind, housing is more than investment. There should be a human rights element. So it's interesting now that we've got a Victorian Supreme Court judge who is also now saying you should be thinking of housing as a human right. In other words, there should be places for people to live. It shouldn't just be those who can afford it.
Yeah, look, totally agree with all that, Martin. I concur with your thoughts as well. But it's not up to 26 million Australians to house the rest of the world. And that's something
Good point.
that the author didn't of the article didn't talk about. It's not our obligation. To house the rest of the world, unfortunately. And we got to look at human rights start in our own backyard.
Yes.
And our own backyard is Australia, and the Australian us Aussies that live here. Now, if you extend it out to when I read the article over the weekend, I started thinking about the, I've got a lot of mates, and because I grew up at in part of my teenage years was spent in behind Cabramatta with mum and the girls, and at a bonny rig, and I've got a lot of mates went to school with that that were refugees. A lot of my mates that I still have that from time to time, they discuss how they the journeys on the boat, and that's something that Australia was always great at receiving refugees, and but in numbers that were consistent and that were housed, and we got along. But when you start bringing in millions, I mean, we're talking about, I think at that time it was 17,000 refugees that came over at that time. But now we've got 7.5 million, 750,000 coming in on a yearly basis or something. Or I mean, the numbers just keep on, growing. So yeah, yeah, to yeah, in a nutshell, concur with your thoughts. Agree with the High Court judge, but I think they missed the point again. And that is you've got you're putting it's and I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent as well in closing. You're putting the same tangent on how housing being a human right. But they want us 26 million to house the rest of the world, and also our emissions footprint is very minimal, and yet we're the bunnies that are shutting down our coal plants and selling our coal to China and Asian countries that are building hundreds of coal plants, coal-fired electric plant, and we're going to be tearing down. I think it's what I think 30,000 hectares or something in Queensland of native land where we're going to absolutely decimate the koala population there, or to put up what windmill turbines that are going to power a small township for 4 hours at full capacity. I mean that this is crazy shit. I mean we should stop trying to. Trying to blow the nose of the rest of the world and look after our own people before we start trying to fix the rest of the world's problems, right?
Yeah, Edwin, I think there's a very important point there. And I will just come back to that picture because I want to highlight something really important, right? Did you notice that in the middle of this picture, there's actually one, two, three, four plots that aren't developed? That's very, very un-Australian to leave a bit of open space and a footpath. Clearly a mistake there, Edwin, as well.
I was trying to look at that. I was trying to. That's it. Now you got me. Now I'm going to have to try to dig around. Maybe there's an easement going down the.
Exactly. Look, Edwin, thank you very much for a very entertaining and I think quite serious conversation point as well today. We've covered some very important topics, and we come back where we started, the question of migration and how governments are handling situations and not doing a great job. And of course, that's putting a lot of pressure on a lot of people. But we'll be coming back next week for another rant. And given the trajectory over the past month, I have no idea. But you mentioned Russia. I think we should keep an eye out there as well.
Oh, third time lucky. Let's see. Russia's going to be in the news this week.
Take care, Edwin. See you
Fingers crossed
soon.
that they're not, because it
Absolutely.
could be more than what we want. All right, mate. All the best. You look after yourself.
Cheers. Take care.